We're live back here at EAA Radio, AM 1210, FM 100.7, and on the web at airventure.org. I'd like you guys to welcome the opportunity to have someone actually call in and ask us a question. The number again is 920-230-7987. Give us a ring. I'm sure you've got some interesting questions out there that are lurking in the backs of your mind.
We've talked a lot about the weather and the accident situations when we're dealing with high altitudes like center, but we've also got some tower considerations. I mean, of course, you're dealing with altitude, you've got thunderstorms, you've got ceilings, but tower, you deal with a lot more ground to low altitude situations. And how is that different?
Well, at Evansville, we have from 10,000 feet down to the surface, and we go about 50 miles from the airport in all directions. A little bit farther here, not quite so far in other places. One thing we do deal with more is a greater mix of pilot experience, too. Anything from the student pilot to the airline pilots, where Don usually gets the high-time pilots that are flying high. We don't have access to as much weather information that I think we really should have.
You got a lot more windows.
We have more windows.
They're not too good at night, though.
True.
Didn't help in Daytona either, did it?
It didn't help in Daytona, and that is a consideration sometimes. And it doesn't help when our windows get fogged up and you can't even see beyond the windows.
I won't even ask what's going on in there.
I was
going to
say, who's flying in that situation?
So, yeah, it's kind of strange doing non-radar in a tower cab, working on an airport. It's been done, though.
How do you guys handle fast movers like tornadoes? Just tell everybody to get out of the way?
Well, in the center, it's really not a problem because we can't see them.
Okay.
Now, I'm not kidding. I don't want to pick on the National Weather Service guys. Actually, I want to compliment you. Y'all were talking about how the weatherman's just always sometimes right. These guys that we work with at the center, they're actually in the center. And we moved them down in there after Southern 242 crashed at New Hope, Georgia. They do a spectacular job. And seriously, I go over there and I get a briefing from these guys, and it's like they'll tell you it'll start snowing at 3,500 feet between 8:30 and 9:30 p.m. And they're right. I said, now how it gets messed up from them to the weatherman on the TV station.
That's right.
I don't know. Well,
it's not like a subscription service, and the TV guy's not paying for the top tier service.
I really don't know, but we. Just a funny story about them. We were sitting there working in the center one time, all 150 whatever's on the shift there. And, of course, there's 400 people in the building, in the staff and administrative side and whatnot. And we're just working away airplanes, and all of a sudden we hear this. And it just lasted for about 30 seconds, and it was gone. And then 2 or 3 minutes later, some guys came inside. A tornado just went by. It went right across the corner. Of the lot that the center sits on.
Wow.
Blew the fence down in front. I went around the corner and had a couple of words with the National Weather Service.
Yeah.
I think you should have known about that one, huh? Wow.
They probably said something, just nobody bothered telling us.
That's funny. Well, now, on the tower side, stuff that you don't have to deal with in a center other than this one unique time. You do have to deal with things that hit the surface.
True.
And wind shear.
We're talking weather, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Not airplanes.
They have to deal with that too. But wind shear is a much bigger deal.
It is.
At ground level or on approach.
And there's a lot of facilities that do have the wind shear technology that they can actually pick up on that with the sensors around the airport. But not all airports do have them. We don't have them at Evansville. We do get fronts that come through with the wind gusts and the rapid change of the weather and with the thunderstorms and all. And really, a lot of the time, our best tool is the Mark I eyeball.
Yeah.
We had a tornado come by our facility 1 year. And I think it's more out of morbid fascination than anything. Most of us stayed in the tower to watch it because it was kind of going left to right instead of just coming right at us. Not that we really had much of any place to go, but
yeah,
it was.
You would want to get away from the glass anyway.
Absolutely. You would. If it was coming towards us, it had been feet beating down towards the base of the tower at least.
You know, Bob said that Mark I eyeball a couple of times. And it's so simple it, you know, maybe we're just overlooking it, but I had a guy drop by the NACA tent yesterday, and he's actually put together some training for controllers, and he's actually was telling us, you know, controllers every once in a while, it might behoove them just to remind the guy, look, if you can get VFR, tell me, you know, how I can get you VFR. He said, thunderstorm avoidance, the best thing you can do is stay VFR.
Yeah.
That's it.
And seriously, even in the center environment and whatnot, even if you're on an IFR flight plan, yeah, we know you're allowed to go into clouds. But if you're trying to dodge the thunderstorms and you can deviate to stay VFR, nothing beats being able to see those thunderstorms.
See and avoid.
To deviate around them. And again, it's such a simple concept, but, you know, then again, it might bear repeating.
Do you guys run into situations where you advise a pilot of a weather situation and he says, well, I don't care, I'm going to continue on?
I have.
Oh, yeah.
Well, just last week, we had thunderstorms in the area, and I was advising this one Baron pilot, and he's up at 10,000 feet westbound. And it wasn't real big, maybe about 10, 12 miles in diameter.
That's big.
But he said, well, I told him, I think either 20 degrees left or right is going to take you around it. And what would you like to do? And another guy, he had a weather radar, and he said, well, I show a lot of red in it. And the Baron pilot said, well, I'd like to go down to 4 and, you know, see what it looks like. Said, well, okay. So he stayed on his course. Says, okay, we're going to deviate to the right a little bit. Okay, well, this is moving to the east. And he got through there, and he deviated very slightly. And he got through, and it's just light rain. Oh, how was your ride? Oh, really pretty good. So what I thought would look pretty bad and what somebody was reporting, seeing red on their weather radar, and he made it around. But
you don't want to play those odds too often.
Not too often. Definitely go around.
Don, I don't want to interrupt this thought, but we have a caller.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Let's see if we can pipe him up here.
Hello.
Hello. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good.
And this is Digital Dave. Who am I speaking to?
Chuck.
Okay, Chuck, what's your question?
Yeah, when I'm getting my IFR clearance, sometimes I hear people only read back just the transponder code. Is that encouraged, or is that just a special situation, or is that somebody just doing things wrong?
Okay. Well,
I want to hear the entire clearance back.
I wanted to make sure I heard that correctly. They get an entire IFR clearance, and they're only reading back their transponder code?
Right.
I heard that right, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Was that it?
Yeah.
They're not doing it correctly. That was a simple one. Seriously, they need to read back I think the AIM says the pertinent parts or something like that, but they need to read back the routing and the altitude.
And altitude is so critical.
They need to read the whole thing back.
Well, now I have heard people... I have heard people read back their clearances. As loud as I can be, I can't compete with that.
Well, actually,
you don't like the sound of
Mustangs
in the morning?
I have heard people read back clearances and have partial, or I've heard, you know, something transposed or something missing.
Right.
And I guess maybe the controller's just so busy, they move on, and there's no confirmation. And sure enough, there are other times when you're flying along and you hear somebody give a handoff to another frequency, and you hear the pilot read it back wrong, and you don't hear the controller correct it, and I think to myself, they'll be back in about 2 seconds. And sure enough, about a minute later, come back on and go, what was that frequency again? And that kind of gunks up the airwaves a little bit.
Yes,
so.
It does. And sometimes you hear the controller saying to himself, he'll be back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
well, and as we started to get into before our caller, the VFR pilot that gets themselves stuck in an IFR situation.
Right.
And how hard is it to help someone out who's having a hard time admitting that they're in a situation they can't handle and that they shouldn't be there, you know, certificate-wise, they're not even rated to be in it in the first place. So.
Right. That's a really, really tough emergency to handle.
It is.
And it is an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And how often does that happen?
More often than we'd like. I would guess in 25 years I probably saw 8, maybe a dozen.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, that's just when I'm there. That's not how many are out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a couple of them that didn't end very well.
Same here.
You know, a controller
time
just
is everything
can't
here.
Fly
right.
the airplane.
Right.
And really about what you're limited to as a controller is trying to be calm so the pilot will be calm. And again, you can't get up there and fly it for them. Most controllers have very limited knowledge of piloting. We do have some pilots, and if we run into a situation like that, that's the first question everybody asks. We got anybody around here that's a pilot. Mm-hmm. So we usually try to find somebody at the facility. It's not always available. It's nothing that's ever going to be formalized, I don't think. But you just have to handle each emergency as it comes up because they're all so unique.
The most important thing is to realize that you are getting in trouble and ask for the help.
Yep. Right.
Because that's what we're there for. That's what we get paid.
One thing they teach the student pilot is the only maneuver is a 180-degree turn.
Yep. Yeah.
Period.
All right.
You don't know what's ahead of you, but you know what's behind you.
Mm-hmm. Talking about pilots, that you warn them and you warn them, and they just got to go up. I had a 737. I'm sorry, dating my age again, but it was a Piedmont 737.
Wow. They flew jets?
And he was flying into Greensboro. And so he was about 30 or 40 miles west of Greensboro in a just nasty line of thunderstorms. And he's going up there looking at the radar, trying to find a hole. He got right up to it, and he said, it's just not there. He said, Center, we're turning around. Now, it is not every day you see an airline pilot turn around.
Yeah.
They can usually find some gap, seam, whatever to get into.
There are financial considerations on that, too.
This guy probably was headed for a hole, and it just closed up on him.
Yeah.
Just nowhere else to go. But they usually have a much better long-range plan. It's just it didn't work out with this one. I had a Bonanza about 20 miles, 30 miles behind him. And when this 737 turns around, I immediately warned him. I said, there's a 737 up there. He said,
the hole
closed up on it, and he's doing a 180 coming back out of there. And his response was, well, we'll go look at it.
Oh.
See, I don't know that people realize how fast this stuff moves sometimes, too. I mean, you might get up there and take a look at it and think you're going to turn around, but in a 152, 172.
It's a close race.
Yeah. It's going
it turned out okay. I mean, as fast as the hole closed up, another one opened up. But I mean.
So the Bonanza made it through.
Just because.
I bet that 737 pilot never heard the end of it.
But just because you got through doesn't mean it was a good idea.
Every time you beat the odds, you're just making it one more step closer to not beating them next time. So.
That does remind me something. If we got time, on the next round, I want some people to understand that when it shows the, it will display the worst level of weather that it picks, regardless of altitude. So a lot of times when that guy is going under mm-hmm. the storm at 4,000, all that moisture is actually upstairs in the storm, say 10, 20,000 feet, whatever. It's when the bottom lets out that's the problem.
Absolutely.
So you can go under one and think you're getting away with it.
Until
all of a sudden, mm-hmm. the bottom just drops out of it, and you'll find yourself in big trouble.
I don't know. Yeah. I stay away from red things in general.
Right.
Well, I think we're getting to the end of our hour here. So.
Yep. And I thank you guys for joining us.
We've had Bob
Thanks
Knowles
for having us.
Dave.
And Don Brown. We've got from tower to center. So
tower to center.
Tower
to breakdown
and center.
Yep.
Thanks for having us.
We really appreciate it.
We'll be here again tomorrow with more Push to Talk ATC chatter. So
all right.
Tune in again on EAA 1210 AM.
100.7
FM.
And
around the world on airventure.org.